Where are you guys?
How's your Wednesday, Terry?
My thing's here, I was done by 5:30. It was the greatest thing ever. I got to go home and not, you know, be around my family. It was great. Is this recording already?
Good morning, everyone. It's 9:02. I call this meeting to order. Thank you all so much for being here. I know we've had a bit of a hiatus, but we had very good reason to, I think. We did have a few holidays. So we're going to go around the room, starting over here, and we're just going to do a quick announcement who we are. Please start.
Good morning. I'm Eve, and I'm going to talk with the administrator.
Thank you, Eve.
David Gilchrist with the No Help Offender Program and the Fraternal Release.
Excellent.
Chief Pascal, Chief of Programs and Transitional Services with JSO Department of Corrections.
Excellent.
Kenya McCloud.
Hit the, when you see it's green, you're good. Just hit the button. Wait, maybe.
Kenyatta McCloud, Correctional Service Counselor for Jacksonville Reentry Center.
Tyrone Johnson, Jacksonville Reentry Center.
Charlie Cofer, Public Defender.
Jimmy Peluso, City Council District 7 and Chair of the Subcommittee.
Kristen Smith-Williams, Vice President for Reentry Services for River Region Human Services.
Excellent. Well, first I want to thank everyone who was able to show up today and will be briefing us. We're now kind of entering into the R part of this subcommittee, which we're going to talk a little bit more about rehabilitation / recidivism, some of the things that are a little more less tangible in some cases, you know, different programs, different things that both the city offers right now and JSO offers right now, and different things that we can see. Oh, there we go. All right. Now it's official. Different things that ensure that those who leave our jail don't come back. We have some great programs that exist right now that I think will be important for us to sort of look at. And then there might be some lessons learned, some best practices that we can see across the state and across the country, and maybe even a few folks here that, you know, we just haven't heard from kind of in the past. So we're going to be hearing from those individuals over the next couple of meetings that we're holding. I think, had a really good first two portions of this committee. I know that I learned far more about the intake process and the adjudication process than I ever had before. Maybe if not for this committee, I might not have ever really learned about those things. So I genuinely appreciate everyone who's put that work together for us, you know, our staff, Eve, everyone up here. So, by the way, do we have technical difficulties, it seems? Do we know if someone's calling in? Brooks? Do we know if somebody's calling in?
Yes, we do. We'll have Colonel Wells calling in.
Okay.
So we're setting that up now.
Okay, excellent. Sorry about that. I just want to make sure we're not, you know, out of order. I feel like we're doing some good work on this, and luckily the chair of the full committee has given us more time to kind of do some more of these meetings if we feel the need to. So I think we'll probably go, throughout probably the rest of the month and maybe into the first week or two of January before we put together our final report. Tyler is unfortunately not with us. I think he's feeling ill. I think he might be calling in, but you know, there's something going around, so everyone get your flu shot or do the things. All right, so we have the meeting from November 17th kind of in front of us. Please, throughout the meeting, take notes, take a look at it, see what suggestions or takeaways or things you want to add to it based on our meeting last week. For those of you who weren't here, it might be a little foreign to you. But if you've got comments or commentary, let us know, let Brooks know, and we'll make sure Tyler makes changes to the notes. I figure we just kind of jump right into it. Oh, and by the way, I should let everyone know, I think at 10 o'clock there's going to be a fire drill. So if you didn't know, leave the building. That's the best way to finish up a fire drill. I think when you walk out here, you're going to go out right in the main exit and entrance. So that's going to be at 10:00. It's going to be 10 o'clock. So we've got 53 minutes before it kicks off. Just don't freak out, right? I don't know, maybe. Maybe they'll turn on a real fire, too, for good measure. So with that said, let's go straight into, unless everyone has comments, anyone has comments they want to take a look at. Let's go right into the JREC portion of this. Is there some kind of presentation, or are you going to, is it going to be like a PowerPoint, or is there a?
Well, it's actually the same.
What am I doing? Of course.
Yeah.
All right. The floor is yours, Tyrone and Kenyatta. By the way, you're the second Kenyatta I've met.
Okay, just to kind of talk about a little bit about JREC, the program's actually been around since maybe 2007 when the sheriff's office took it over from the actual city of Jacksonville. And right now what we do, the main thing that we do is we try to provide people coming back to Duval County all the resources they need to hopefully not return, not to reoffend and or return to incarceration. So,
may I? Sorry, I kind of ask questions throughout. Is that okay if I do that?
Not a problem.
Can you real quick? Are you guys JSO? Are you?
We're employed by the sheriff's office.
Got understood. All right, go ahead.
And so what we do again, we try to provide all the necessary resources that a inmate returning from incarceration, that's male and female, get all the necessary resources they need to not reoffend and return to incarceration. That process actually begins usually about 6 months before they are released from incarceration. What we do, we reach out. We have a list, and everyone that's getting out of incarceration from 6 months to a year. And what we do, one of us will go out to the prison. We'll do when they do a call out, we sit down, we talk about the program, tell them everything that we provide and how we can help them. We try to build that rapport with the inmate and let them know, hey, you got some, when you get out, these are the things that we can help you with. These are the things we provide. There are certain small things that we try to do maybe before they're released. Not a lot of things, but a few small things that we try to provide before they're released. But once they're released, they become, one of our clients, and we start the process of getting them all the things that they need. The three things that makes them available to be a client, obviously they had to be resident of Duval County before they were arrested. The crime had to be committed here in Duval County, and they actually have to be returning to Duval County. So it's called the three Ds. So basically, we don't take anybody from Clay County, St. John's County, Nassau County. Right? So they must be 18 years old, which is pretty much a given. But again, the main thing, one of the main things that we try to provide is assistance with probation, housing, clothing, ID, driver's license, just anything that they need to kind of get back on their feet. I think a few years ago, the director called them kind of like a MASH unit. We try to bandage them up and get them started. The young lady sitting next to my coworker Kenyatta, she is the employment coordinator. She does an excellent job with employment and training. So I'll let her talk a little bit about that.
So yes, I do handle employment, and I know with a lot of reentry centers, we as a whole feel like employment fixes the problem. But me personally, I think it's more about maintaining a job, because there are jobs available on every corner. But if you can't maintain that job, that's a part of recidivism. Like, you are going to recidivate if you cannot maintain a job. So I feel like JREC, we take the holistic approach. Like, again, he said we provide housing. We provide the clothing. Sometimes they need proper identification, out-of-state birth certificates. That's one of the biggest things coming from prison and incarceration. The prison system won't order an out-of-state birth certificate. So JREC, we are able to, so it helps them, because you have to have I-9 documents in order to obtain employment. So sometimes an individual don't know where to start. They have been incarcerated 20-plus years, and they have to have all documents. So that's one of the biggest deals for employment. So again, maintaining. For me, maintaining can be having a proper eyewear. So community partners is important. Having health care, mental health, all that falls under maintaining. So I go in the community and partner with a lot of different agencies, whether it's CareerSource, Goodwill, you name it. You can name any agency, and JREC have some type of communication or partnership with them.
First off, Coral Messina's just joined us. Why you're not sitting up here, I don't know.
The Teams isn't working. That's why
I'm
screen over here, so I couldn't hear anything.
Yeah, no, we're working on it right now. Have a seat somewhere up here. You're a member of our illustrious committee. So if I may ask a few questions, so how do you identify individuals for this program? Is it offered to everyone? Is it how does one kind of properly get identified and brought in?
We do have a partnership with Department of Corrections, so they actually sent us the list of, again, everyone getting out of incarceration usually within what, 6 months?
6 months.
And it that meets the criteria. I don't know if you know, every inmate returning to any county in Duval County has to felon to register. So every inmate coming back to Duval County has to come in our building and felony register. So we partner with the felony registration part of the building. So everyone that comes in, they felony register. If they want to be a client, they come right, they'll walk right on the other side of the walkway and start working with the JREC clients.
So I don't know if you all are aware, but we have a Baker reentry. So that is a prison for all Duval inmates returning back to Duval County. So it's kind of like...
is it Baker reentry?
It's called Baker reentry, and it's all for Duval inmates that are returning.
Usually a year before their release date, they're moved to Baker reentry.
Where's this place located?
Sanderson, Florida.
Where?
Sanderson. Yes. So it's like about 45 minutes from here. They will transport them to Jacksonville to register, and then again, they hand them over to us. We partner with them prior to them getting out. We go in 3 to 4 times out of a year to meet with them. They have programs. We are very close-knit with the programs department. So they offer, like, skill trades, like logistics, electrician, forklift. They offer a lot of different programs. So when they hand them over to me, I'm able to assist them with employment.
I know this is a little bit outside of what we're dealing with here, but can you talk a little bit about the state work release centers?
Yes. We're
still open and
operating. Yes.
Explain what they are and how y'all interact with them.
So we have a lot of dealing with the, we have 2 work release centers in Jacksonville. They are privatized. And I am on the board with the Jacksonville Bridge Work Release Center. And so what we do is we come together 3 times out of a year as well. And we try to, you know, just partner with each other. But the good thing about the Bridges of America and Dinsmore is they all qualify, well, most will qualify for JREC, and they have them working, so when they get out, they already have money saved up.
A lot of the services that they provide, that we provide, they already kind of provide that. They usually a year before their release date to work to save money. So they maybe those last 3 or 4 months, they start helping them find, you know, a place to stay and things of that nature. So they somewhat provide a lot of the services that we provide. Now, what we usually do in that situation, I am in charge of the housing portion of the program. So a lot of times they may have money, they may have a job, they may not have anywhere to stay. So what we do provide what's called transitional housing. So we provide transitional housing up to about 90 days, and those are vendors from the community. All of them are, you know, people out of the community who have, you know, been through the process to become a vendor. And what we do, we try to place them in a situation that's beneficial to them, maybe close to where they work or, you know, things of that nature. We also provide, you know, sex offender housing and other stuff. But, you know, those are they have to fit the restriction requirement. If it's a sexual offender, it's 1,000 feet. If it's a sexual predator, 2,500 feet. Obviously can't be anywhere where children gather, school, park, you know, anything of that nature. So those, again, one of the other services that we provide, assistance with probation, all the things that a person needs on probation, any kind of classes. So that's sex offender treatment, mental health treatment, substance abuse treatment, anger management, batteries intervention. We help with all those.
Where does the majority, where's your funding come from?
Sheriff's
office.
From JS, so it's not like a state run?
No.
It's not a state appropriated program? All right. And do you, how do you provide things like housing? Like, are you working with Sulzbacher? Are you working with groups like
all our vendors are from the community. I get 5 or 6 phone calls a week with people wanting to become vendors. And so I go out and do my part and make sure they meet the requirements to become a vendor. The house meets the requirement to become a vendor. And they go through that process. They actually have to become a vendor with the city. So they have to go through that part. And once they become a vendor with the city, we make sure with the offender tracking unit that the property meets the restrictions for that.
How are you folks doing who just called in? We're sorry about the technical difficulties that we've had. We really appreciate everyone that's been I've gotten a few texts already. So thank you guys for joining us. We're in the first part of our agenda right now. Oh, and you're frozen.
I'm not sure they have audio from us yet.
All right. Thank you. I see Reggie.
Hey, to the folks from Putnam County, Mr. Peluso just wanted to extend his so apologies to you. They're working on getting the sound fix right now. They're having some technical difficulties this morning.
Roger that. Thanks. No, thanks so much. They can. Okay. Reggie, can you hear us? Reggie? I can't hear you. Your lips are moving. I can't hear you. All right. We'll figure this out. Back to you.
Yeah.
Say it again. I do now, yes, sir. Reggie, can you hear us?
Jimmy, we can hear you.
Excellent, all right. It's the voice of God, I don't know who that was. all right, sir, so how does one become a vendor? What does that process look like? How much, like, if somebody has a room, are we doing boarding rooms? Are we doing a full house? Well, How's that kind of work?
It's usually a whole house. And basically, like I said, it has to meet certain restrictions. Basically, every person that's in a transitional house has to have 70 feet of living space. So basically, we don't warehouse people. You can't put 5 or 6 people in a room of 100 feet or whatever. So what they do, they go, what is it called? The iCloud, that's how you become an actual vendor with the city. I'll go through that process, put all your banking information in, and stuff like that. Once they do that, they have to provide their insurance, a copy of the the rules and regulations for the program, say insurance. And once they kind of do all those things, usually we'll do a final walkthrough to make sure it meets all the restrictions.
All right.
We definitely want to provide a clean, safe, secure environment. We want to make sure it's near on the bus line, for them to be able to get back and forth.
All right. So what? I kind of like to know a little bit more about where we're kind of placing people after they're released.
I'll be honest with you, all over the city.
Okay. All right. If you're able to kind of send me the the checklist or whatever you do to when you go through a property, so they'll get entire. How about apartment buildings? Do you work with JHA? Do you?
No.
No. Okay. All right. So now my next question is: are these individuals that have their own income and they're able to pay for rent, or is that paid for by JREC?
It's actually paid for by JREC initially.
Okay.
But again, the main goal is again for them to be incarcerated within the first month, and then start providing saving money for them after the 90-day period to pay on their own.
Okay.
Yes. So a part of saving, I have partnerships with local banks that are able to assist them with banking, and then employment. And also, we know that not everyone is eligible to work, so we do have SOAR. And that's Social Security. So we do start the process, and we will work with them while they are in the process of being approved for Social Security. Sorry.
Can you kind of speak to me about after that 90 days, how many individuals are kind of no longer able to stay in that place because they don't have a strong source of income, or do we see stuff like that?
Yes, we do. But we also have a partnership with the city emergency funding. Okay. And when they do have funds, they are able to extend.
ERAP, the emergency.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
So when they do have funding, they are able to assist our clients that still need help as far as more time. Like, they base it off of the total rent, and they base it off of that. But that's not an all-the-time thing. Basically, employment is the key to sustaining housing.
And the case managers push that, you know, hey, you need to be working. And they need to be making contact with Ms. Kenyatta on a weekly basis about employment.
Okay. Yeah, make sure you guys are speaking into the...
Can we get on the microphone over here? Is that cool? Or can we actually... Can you hear me? Okay.
Even better. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're gonna hand you that one, too.
Okay.
Make sure you press that button. And we got a few folks calling in saying, make sure we're talking. And just move that down a little bit. Yeah. Thank you. We appreciate it. We're having all the difficulties today.
Okay.
All right, so sorry, continue. Okay, so on top of, housing, I noticed SOAR in here. That sounds awesome because, yeah, I'm sure there's a couple SSDI and a couple SSI benefits that people can get that they might not be familiar with. In terms of certifications and employment, how does kind of that process work? Are they doing it while they're currently incarcerated? Or when they get out, is there immediately like, hey, let's put you in this kind of program or that program?
So it's after they are released, but I can tell you prior to them being released, we do go out and travel to different facilities, also local. So I do build a rapport with them, and I do visit a lot of the programs locally. So they are currently like in mattress sewing programs. So I kind of see their skills while they are incarcerated. So when they do get out, they will go through my employment process. That process is employment orientation, where we focus on not just, again, gaining a job, but maintaining, and also have a thinking for a change, a cognitive behavior, knowing the do's and don'ts on jobs. So that is a part of the orientation as well. After the orientation, they are scheduled an intake with me, and I focus on four questions. The first question is the criminal background, not the circumstance, but more of the situation as far as the conviction year, if they have any barriers, if they're on probation, CRD, anything that can prevent them from gaining employment. The second is the work experience, and it does not just have to be work experience. It can be skills that may have been taught while in prison or incarceration. The third that I focus on is their job desire. For me, job desires are important, not just placing them in a job, but more of something they have an interest in so they can, you know, commit to the job. The fourth is the area, the side of town that they stay on, and their mode of transportation. From that point, I do match them with my partners based on their skill set and the employer needs.
Yeah, my apologies. I'm for whatever reason, we're having the toughest time with technology at the moment. And I know you said it a couple times already. So how exactly do we identify the individuals that could be in this? Do you just put out a blanket invitation to anyone who's on the felony list, and then they kind of contact you? Or
usually what happens is, again, we get the list, and we make what's called a call out to the prison.
Okay.
So they'll have, you know, 40 guys waiting for us when we get there. We'll get there and we'll talk about the program in a setting like this, and then we'll have a breakout session. Hey, who needs help? And 9 times out of 10, most guys are going to raise their hand and say, I need help with this, I need help with that.
Okay.
That's how we initially sign them up.
Okay. All right.
And also with employment, that is a side of a program that we take all anyone that needs a job. So we do have program requirements, but if it's someone that have an old conviction and just need employment assistance, or we have other programs that's inside of our building, like misdemeanor department, court diversion, pretrial, they are able to receive employment assistance as well.
Okay. All right. So how many individuals are kind of in the program right now? Do we know?
Our current number?
Tens of thousands? Hundreds?
No.
It was 90
Yeah, so roughly 90.
Okay.
So this is the correct.
Now, correct me, but isn't they can take advantage of various services? So, like, they may just do a few things, or may use all of your resources.
Absolutely. Everybody's situation is different. You know, so we take more of that. If this is what you need, then this is what we can provide. You know, everybody doesn't necessarily need housing. Everybody doesn't necessarily need probation assistance or whatever. Just whatever, wherever they're at, that's what we try to provide. One thing that I think Kenyon and I have talked about over the last few years is we would like to provide more in-house training. We would like to do more forklift and things of that nature and food service training, just things that guys need. Those are one of the things that we have talked about wanting to do more of in the JREC program.
And the benefit to doing it in-house, is that just because less transportation issues or what you just, or you just want to offer more?
I think it's a little bit of both, actually, you know.
So what are some of the other, I mean, this is a heavy lift, what you're doing with the population. And when I used to work for Judge Kofor, he had me do some research on reentry stuff. And I know that JREC is like a crown jewel for the state of Florida. Not all communities have it. If you could make a wish list of things that you need or like you said, more in-house training, is there other things that you wish, if you could like make the program the best it could be? Like, do you like mental health resources,
yes,
things like that? Because I imagine a lot of people come out of prison or jail and there's unresolved mental health issues that get in the way of all these employment.
Yes, I would say mental health.
Actually, at one point we were doing in-house, and it was great. You know, when you act as a case manager, you can see your client on a regular basis and see, you know, you can kind of tell if he's having issues, he's sliding off to the left. You know, so I think that, I mean, being able to do the in-house training would be perfect. In-house treatment would be perfect for us. Obviously, the problem was, well, it needed space.
So is this just a space issue?
Yes.
Okay. And did you have, it was like a licensed mental health counselor?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And because you don't have the space, that resource isn't there?
That's why I went away years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other questions?
What about nothing else for your wish list?
More training
okay.
Training opportunities.
How many staff is there? How many staffers?
10. On the JREC side.
I think 5 case managers.
10 staffers. And you said there's about 90-ish individuals in the program right now?
Yeah.
So you did say about 90% of individuals will raise their hand and say, yes, I need help. How? I feel like it's going to be more than 90.
Well,
That 90 is those that currently have been released and are coming to see them.
Yeah. Sure.
So we have a lot of incarcerated clients. So we do count incarcerated clients. In Wells, we have over 300 incarcerated clients.
Okay.
That are already assigned to a case manager.
All right, that makes some more sense.
So that's like prison in-reach kind of thing?
Yes, yeah, so pre-release. Okay. So they get birthday cards. We send them just information on the program. We visit them. Just build a plan. We have a form that we use called a needs assessment. So at that point, we do in-house. Well, we do a pre-release needs assessment, and when they are released, we do a post-release. So it basically just a summary of their needs, and if anything changes. So what I always like to remind the clients are, you know, potential clients is not everything works out. So somebody can tell you they'll be there for you, but the day you are released, JREC is not going anywhere. We are there. So sometimes we are the only support that some guys get out having.
And a lot of things, like she's saying, like, for example, like that first initial meeting, they say, oh, either I need help, or they'll be like, oh, I'm good, I don't need help. But the one thing that I tell guys is I say, you know, if you're not sure, if you know, that's fine. If you know you need help, please come up and take the help. If you're a person, you don't know, you're not sure, then you need to be the person telling somebody, hey, I need help. Because I tell them, I would much rather have a place for you to go when you get out on Friday and not need it versus you get out, need somewhere to go, and I don't have it for you. So, again, the main thing is, like, while they're still incarcerated, again, build that rapport and make them understand they have resources, they have help. Again, some of the small things that we will do while they're still incarcerated is maybe try to go ahead and get them a birth certificate, because that's in some states, especially up north states, it may take 5 months to get a birth certificate.
Yep.
You know, so that's 5 months without a birth certificate, can't work, can't get an ID.
So do you help them get their ID as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Driver's license and ID.
I did, Ms. Councilman Peluso, I did a reentry simulation with the DOC earlier this year, and there was a stark difference between those who had an ID card and those who didn't, who was going to be successful and who was going to fail. It was amazing.
I've heard stuff like that before. I know a program down in Orlando, it's the same thing. They, like, go to individuals living on the street and make sure they have identification. Eve, did you have a concern or a question?
Just a question. So are these inmates coming out of the Department of Corrections State Prison, or are they coming out of our county jail?
County jail.
Eve's question was, I'm just so people can hear. We're hearing folks having difficulties. Eve's question was about whether these are individuals that are coming out of DOC facilities or if it's just the county jail. I'm sorry, go ahead.
State facilities and also local jails.
So both state and local.
But
yes.
For local, it's a certain population. Again, they had been in programs while they're in local incarceration.
Say that one more time. So they've been in
There are different requirements for local versus state, but we do accept local and state.
So how many are from the county of your 90? How many are from county jail versus
state? Of the 90-ish people, how many are from the county system and from the state system?
So the 90 number is the active clients, but again, we have 300 incarcerated, so we have them spread it out through local and state facilities.
And when are you able to start interacting with folks who are in the system?
6 months six months before release.
Gotcha. Just want to make sure I have that.
Do you all have any, like, peer support or mentors for people?
We do have a lot of client completers is what we call them that will come back and speak. And we just keep them, like, on standby if someone needs someone, like, to share their story with. So we don't have, like, a program, peer support program, but we do have returning clients.
If there was an interest, is that something y'all would like to explore?
Yes.
Definitely could. Actually, you'd be surprised at how many guys who have completed the program love to come back and talk about the program and how it helped them.
If you got folks like that that we can contact, I'd be really grateful for that.
One.
I'd love to kind of hear a little bit about success stories, how folks are doing.
Well, that would be considered community service, right? And
yes.
And they might be able to use that to help offset costs and whatnot.
Are there any other major questions right now? We do have two individuals that are calling in from Putnam County. I want to give them some time and let them kind of break away. But do we have any last minute questions? And we can always kind of come back.
Maybe come back, circle back.
All right. Thank you guys so much. I do have another question or two that I'll probably throw your way in a bit. But I do want to give time to Colonel Wells and Putnam County Sheriff's Office. Can you gentlemen hear me?
Oh,
you are muted, sir. You are muted, sir. I cannot hear you.
They muted them all. So
they muted
it. We'll work on that.
We're having some. It sounds like I'm on an airplane. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
All right. Got you a little bit better there. Please introduce yourselves and please go right into your presentation.
Yes, sir. I'm Colonel Joe. I'm under here. Yeah. Hey, Major Scott Surtsey. I'm the Director of Corrections for the Sheriff's Office.
Thank you both. It is a little difficult to hear you. I don't know if you can get a little closer to the mic, but I'm getting about 80% of what you're saying. There we go.
Okay, let's try it again.
It's definitely better.
Is that better?
Yep.
Again, I'm the undersheriff.
Thank you, undersheriff. Yep, go ahead. The floor is yours.
Sorry, I'm Major Scott Surtsey, Director of Corrections, Sheriff Hope.
Thank you, Major. All right, go ahead.
So, again, let me just clarify, do you have specific questions, or do you just like us to begin a conversation about the facility? I really haven't been very clear on exactly the area you want to hear. So, I guess, tell me how we can help you, and we're prepared to provide you with a bunch of operational information about our facility if you want to tell me what exactly you're looking for.
So for the most part, we're looking for
specific programs that you guys might be instituting. As I've been told, you guys have a very successful recidivism rate. And I assume that it's due to good programming. So it's just kind of more or less, what are you guys instituting and what kind of results are you seeing? Maybe lessons learned that we could use, especially as we look to potentially build a new jail.
Okay, very, very well. We'll look at that between the two of us. So, you know, I imagine some of this thing.
It's getting harder to hear you, sir.
We're challenged trying to hear you guys do. Is it getting any better?
It gets a little bit better as you get closer. It's just it breaks up.
Yeah, same.
Councilmember, I think they're using their computer microphone.
Yeah.
And that's our issue.
Yeah, I think that's got to be it. It's the fact that you guys are using your computer microphone. Do you have anything you could attach to it? Do you have any kind of multimedia services down there in Putnam County?
Yeah, so if you do you have other guests you just go to and give us a few minutes to see if we can rectify that?
Absolutely.
That's good.
We'll give you a minute there. Thank you for that. Are there any kind of quick questions about...
Let me go back to a couple of things. What please. Percentage would you say is between state and DOC releases and county jail releases in your program? Is there?
I would say more like a 80%.
The majority are state clients. Okay. A vast majority, probably maybe 85-90%.
Okay.
Now, I know where your facilities are located out in that complex off Commonwealth.
Yes.
With
yes, sir.
All of the other JSO stuff. This isn't to reflect where the new jail is going to be, because I don't know and I don't really want to be that involved in that aspect of this. But do you see some value in having your program placed closer to wherever the new jail complex would go? Or am I asking you something that's a guess?
That's a great question. It would just all depends on if you are moving the registration, because if we stay far away from the jails but we have felony registration, we still run into all the clients that's returning back to Duval County. So it just depends on if you're planning to move the whole reentry as far as including felony registration, then it will probably be some benefit to it.
Well, like I was saying, 99.9% of our clients ride the bus, walk, ride bicycles, or whatever. So wherever it's going to be, it needs to be convenient to a bus line, able to ride a bicycle, you know, things like that.
Are y'all able to give them bus passes? Is that included?
We do.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm thinking more and focusing more on people getting released from the jail. I have this kind of ingrained attitude that the easier you make it for them to immediately access services.
Well, one thing that you can tell.
So I would like to add that I did leave out. When we do build a relationship with the clients that's locally, if we do ask about transportation, we are able to place a bus pass in their release file. And we always give them the directions to get to JREC. We are also able to transport them, pick them up. We coordinate with the local jail, and they can let us know their release time. And we are able to pick them up if we have transportation at that time.
Do you kind of work with local nonprofits as well and different folks in that space, or are you guys kind of a bit of an island? Oh, sorry.
Well, no, we have a plethora of local partners. That's how we thrive.
Okay. Yeah, I know we got, I don't know, I know Reggie's up there. I know Operation New Hope.
One of our partners.
Yes.
Great. Okay, all right. Mm-hmm. All right, good deal. Do we, any questions? All right, if I guess we're still waiting on the sheriff's office. So if we can, if you are ready, Ms. Smith,
yes.
We can kind of talk about the Matrix House, which I'm excited to discuss.
All
Can everyone hear me? Okay, perfect. So, good morning. I'm Kristen Smith-Williams. I'm the Vice President for River Region Human Services, and my focus is the reentry services. So, speaking today about our Matrix House program, it's been around for 30 years. It's a partnership between the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, River Region, and the City of Jacksonville. So, we get our clientele from JSO. River Region is the treatment provider, and City of Jacksonville is the funding source. So very long-standing program in the community. So I'll just break down things that we do, which are similar to JREG, and we work with them as well on a lot of different services. The difference with the Matrix compared to JREG is the in-jail treatment that we do. So each individual we screen, we have a team of substance use prevention specialists that screen the inmates daily. This is a daily routine. We have a court liaison that is in the court system. So we're always working with the judges and local attorneys, private and public sector as well. So once we find an individual that may benefit from the treatment in which we provide substance use disorder treatment as well as mental health and co-occurring, so they can have both. Once we find an individual that meets those qualifications, we get them screened to make sure they are the proper fit for our program. So that's what River Region starts with, the therapeutic aspect. Then we rely on our partners with JSO to look at their criminal history, because we are housed at Community Transition Center, 451 Catherine Street. It is a minimum security facility. So the inmates are allowed to walk around, obviously, with supervision because the whole modality is treatment. So it's a little bit different than your typical incarceration. So we have to make sure the charges are not great charges, because it has to be individuals that's able to maneuver in groups and walk around, different things like that. Once they're screened, we go back to the judges and say this person meets qualification. Then the judges do the sentencing. So our program is 120 days in-house jail treatment followed by a year of aftercare. So that's a 16-month program. And they have to finish that entire program in order to be successful. During the screening process, we let them know this, so it's nothing that they are, you know, surprised about when they get in a courtroom. And a lot of the judges will emphasize the case management part that we do after treatment. So once they are sentenced, JSO does the transporting. We have a wait bed list, so we can only take 135 inmates. So we have a wait bed list that we do intake from, and the intake is based upon their sentencing and their early release and their end of sentence. So it's kind of a numbers game of who gets in, when they get in, that type of thing. So once they're into our program, they are assigned to a counselor. We also have a licensed mental health counselor at the facility as well, and they receive all their treatment at CTC. So we do round-the-clock group seminars, educational seminars. We are partnering and have partnered with Operation New Hope to come in to do some career development classes. We have an LMHC on staff, and then we also use a lot of evidence-based practices to make sure we're covering the different things that an individual goes through with substance use disorder. Once they finish our treatment, it is 4 months. If they successfully complete, then they are integrated into our case management unit, and we call it aftercare. They're there for 1 year, and we do all the things that JREC do as well, but the difference with us is we can connect them in-house if they need further treatment, because River Region, we provide methadone, outpatient treatment, mental health, so we can continue the treatment aspect, because as we know, 4 months, it's a short time for treatment for some people. So we want to, you know, have that connection with our agency to still get them into additional treatment. So what our case managers do, they help them find jobs, ID, birth certificate, Social Security. We are connected now with SOAR. We also place them in a local halfway house, and the contract pays for the first 30 days for them to get on their feet, so they're able to find a job. We also do linkage to other support groups, so NA, AA, Celebrate Recovery, anything to keep them sober. One thing we added to our contract is a peer specialist. So we now have a peer specialist that goes inside the jail and in aftercare to help. And as you know, peers can do a little bit more than just the actual counseling. So that's definitely a benefit that we have. Also, we provide bus passes for them as well. We work with DCF. If any of these inmates have any cases pending, child, different things like that, we also work with them getting a hardship license. So if they have a job, they need to drive, we can work with the safety council with hardship license. If they are completing our program and successful, they will grant them a hardship license. We work with probation on a daily basis. We send monthly reports to them. So we're very interactive, you know, with the courts and also community providers as well. We also hold a commencement. This is one thing that a lot of people kind of look forward to. We do it every January, May, and September of each year. And this is where we celebrate each individual that completed the program. So it's literally a graduation for them. And as you know, some of them never graduated from anything. So we all put our best efforts in it and support. We have a lot of officials come from city, JSO. It's a really well-organized thing to really celebrate the accomplishments that we all partner to help these individuals change lives.
Do you have a date for that?
Tentatively, I will make sure you get it. Please. We're in the process of scheduling that now.
I would love that.
Okay, definitely. So that's the program in itself. Like I said, we've been here 30 years. We do target individuals that are incarcerated in Duval County only. That's the only county that we can serve. We've had many conversations with Clay and other surrounding counties, but really the buy-in that the city of Jacksonville gives us for this program is amazing, and that's really what makes it stellar. I have 35 employees with this contract, so it's very big. Our substance use prevention specialists are housed at PDF. They are there to do screening on the floor. They also go inside the court. And then I have a team of treatment providers at CTC, and they do all the treatment there. And then my case managers and my peer specialists is housed at the Kennedy Center. We utilize that space to be closer to the jail and right in the midst of the city, right downtown, which helps us with bus access, transportation, different things like that. Our case managers do transport clients from jail to local halfway houses, any appointments they need. We do utilize bus passes as much as we can, but we are able to have our case managers to transport as well.
Excellent. Do you have any sort of success rate stuff? Do you track an individual 1 year after they leave the program, things like that?
Yes.
See if they're still kind of clean and sober, sort of a thing?
Yes. Our success rate is 86%. We do the numbers each year. So we have an 86% success rate of individuals that come through our program that do not reoffend again. We can only hold 135 inmates due to the facility that we are in, Community Transition Center. The question I get all the time, can you take more? Well, hopefully, but it's really a facility thing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something I've kind of, you know, was thinking about, but it really depends on the facility we have.
So 135, you said?
135 at a time. That's our contracted number.
So for that 86%, how long do you track them? 1 year, 2 year, 3 years later, or is it indefinitely? Like once they get, let's say they get pulled over again and they're mm-hmm. put through the system again, they go through intake. Is that how you find out, or is it?
So we track them after 1 year after their commencement date. So the program is already 16 months. So we start tracking after that date so we can get a true number of who successfully completed the program. We also look at the individuals that don't attend the case management that we end up having to discharge unsuccessfully to look at that rate as well to see what could have changed, what could have been different, different things like that. We do find that individuals that are sentenced to probation end up staying and doing the aftercare case management longer because that's another condition of their incarceration as well. So that's why we work heavily with the probation officers as well. And it's a benefit for some of them because the judge will give them early release if they complete our program. Sometimes they can get early release from probation if they complete our program. So it can be a benefit for the inmate as well.
How many, this is just like a random question, how many individuals who go through the jail system have a substance abuse issue? Do you have kind of data on that? Or, you know, if it's you're able to take 135, if each
month you get, I don't know, 300 people that have a substance abuse issue, but they can't get in because there's only 135 seats. Like, is that something you have to deal with?
Yes, I don't have the exact number, but I can tell you we do have to sometimes turn away individuals that have a substance abuse problem due to the facility. The facility is a minimum security facility, so sometimes their charges are greater than what we can obtain at our facility. So, yes, there is a lot of individuals that do suffer. I give the great example of sometimes you can have someone with a charge of trafficking, right? That sounds like they may not have substance abuse problems, but they actually do. They have to use substances to stay up to do those type of crimes. You know, so once we talk a little bit more to them, we realize they do abuse substances. They've had family trauma, different things, you know, that cause them to choose the lifestyle as well as the substance abuse. And the lifestyle is addicting. We deal with that a lot, too, with individuals there. They just love that lifestyle. So we have to give them treatment as well, in a sense, to make sure that's something that they can, you know, recover from and see another light and get connected to other resources out there to choose a better life at the end of the day.
Excellent. No, that appeals to me in a lot of different ways. I understand that very much. To that end, and maybe you might know this, Chief Pascal, are the CTC beds under the pretrial detention center, like, It's a different set of okay.
Division. Jails is jails. The pretrial detention facility is jails division. CTC and MCC fall under the prisons division. They all fall under the umbrella of Department of Corrections, but two different divisions within.
And they're two different buildings.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure. So, and it only has 135 beds in there, or just 135 beds?
No. 135 for us. Okay. Yes.
100 or 320.
Right.
The facility.
All right, so 320 for all of the CTC facility.
Because we do have to have a certain amount of non-matrix inmates that do different duties around the jail. So, and those individuals are pretty much controlled by JSO, so they're not a part of the program. But 135 beds are contracted to River Region to service.
There are some pretrial detainees that are CTC.
All right, I might have a few more questions for you, but we do have Putnam Sheriff's Office. Colonel, are you able to hear us?
Yes, sir. How do we sound now?
Oh, you sound so much better. Go ahead, Coral. We are going to be. Now we're running a fire drill in 5 minutes, I believe. Okay. Is that correct, Brooks? Still at 10. All right. Just wanted to make sure you guys knew that. We will have a fire drill. We'll probably be doing a 15-minute hiatus. If you want to at least start, and in 5 minutes, we'll take a quick break.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for the opportunity. You know, it sounds like that we are experiencing much of the same issues that Jacksonville is, just probably on a much smaller scale. Just to give you some perspective, our average daily inmate population for all inmates, pre-trial or post-trial, runs between 350 to 400 inmates. So obviously we're on a much smaller scale, but we, like everybody else, realize that, you know, that folks that are chronic recidivism, that suffer chronic recidivism, which to us means they return to jail three or more times within a five-year period, makes up about 70% of our inmate population. We also estimate, and I'm sure that it's similar for everybody else, that around 70% of our inmate population suffers from substance use disorder or some other type of mental illness. So it came apparent to us within the last couple of years that we needed to change our jail operation and our correctional philosophy into really targeting those chronic reoffenders, most of which are here for nonviolent crime as a result of mental illness or substance use disorder. So, you know, it's a lot of what you were talking about earlier sounds very familiar, but we have made it our focus to launch wide-scale programs that begin inside our facility and then transition the inmate out of the facility and then continue the warm handoffs, and these programs continue. Because as we all know, if you don't do the follow-up once they leave the facility, then most of what we put into them in the facility is lost because they get back into their old people places and things and back in with their old, you know, their old temptations. So I think one of the most successful things, and obviously Major Sorensen is here with me, he's our director of corrections and runs the operation of our jail, so he can chime in at any time. But one of the things I think has been most successful is we have opened and operate recovery pods inside the jail. So basically what a recovery pod is, it's a inpatient substance use treatment facility inside the jail. So we have a male and female recovery pod, which in those pods or sections, housing units in those sections, is only folks in there, either male or female, that are requesting to be there and are dedicated to battling their substance use disorder. So they're removed from general inmate population, and that way there's not folks with them that are trying to talk them out of doing better. They, you know, they're not in with maybe their old dealer or any of those things. So basically it's just like what you would see on the outside is inpatient drug treatment. We just started inside the facility. It's the same counselors, the same activities, the same daily routines, but it's just inmates that are housed with like-minded individuals that want to focus on their recovery. So instead of waiting for the inmate to get out of jail, we've got their undivided attention for however long, we begin the inpatient substance treatment right inside the facility. And then once they leave, there's a warm handoff, and whether they need more inpatient, we have some community partners for that, or whether or not they just need very intensive outpatient treatment, it continues on for however long that needs to take place. We're seeing a lot of success with that because we are able to get so much of the groundwork done while they're inside the facility. So that's probably what I think has been one of our most successful programs, but you know, and Major, any time, we also do everything we've talked about. One of the big things that we found to be a roadblock for folks leaving our facility was unemployment, lack of driver's licenses, even lack of IDs, any of that type of stuff that you would need. So if I had to tell you, you know, what else I think is being very successful, and that's our employment programs. So they are just what you think they would be. We begin their training inside the facility, everything from sewing and embroidery to culinary skills, say food handling, ground maintenance and care, small equipment operation, and we're growing that very shortly to include veterinarian techs. Putnam County Animal Control is in the process of moving their animal, building a new roughly $1 million animal control facility next to our jail, and our inmates will then begin becoming trained as veterinary techs inside that facility in a partnership with the University of Florida School of Veterinary Medicine. The other one that we are on the verge of launching there is we are beginning a program, hopefully within the coming months, for light vehicle maintenance in conjunction with our fleet maintenance program to maintain our agency vehicles. And then those inmates will be trained and certified for oil change, lubrication technicians, and stuff like that. And then along with these training programs, you got to have a job for them when they come out. So we've developed community partners. These community partners have the opportunity to begin employment interviews while the inmate is still incarcerated. And then we conduct a warm handoff when the inmate leaves, goes right into a job, ready to go the next day. We partner with many community partners with that, City of Palatka, Public Works, Putnam County Sanitation Department, Comarco Food Production, Beck Automotive Group, you name it, and they all come to us to hire our inmates. You know, generally we try to look at that process beginning before they leave, and then the inmate goes straight into a job once they leave. So,
Sorry, there, Undersheriff. So, and this is all being run by Putnam Sheriff's Office, right? Or is this a non? Go ahead.
No, This is all done inside our facility through our staff. So we have a staff that focuses on nothing but inmate recovery, inmate improvement, inmate rehabilitation, and inmate reentry. And so all of this is done inside the facility to prepare them for when they leave, as far as the job skills go, correct.
So these are corrections officers that are doing this stuff?
What's that?
These are corrections officers that are doing this stuff, or this is non-uniformed folks?
Both corrections officers and civilian employees. So we call our program Insight Recovery, and so that's the programs that where all this comes together. And this is done while they're inside the facility by both civilian and correctional staff. Yes. Now, a lot of the stuff we talk about, I mean, relies on our community partner. When we talk about our recovery pods, you know, Celebrate Recovery is huge in that. Stuart Marchman Healthcare, which is mental health and substance use treatment provider. So a lot of community partners coming and going from our facility on a daily basis to start these programs while they're still with us. I don't want to get off topic and get where you don't want us to go, but that was just two of what I see as being some of the most successful. There are a multitude of programs going on inside the facility.
What has helped you get the community partners? Because I know many employers are very reluctant to hire people coming out of jail or have felony convictions.
You're right. That can be a challenge. So it began with one partner, and we opened our doors. We allowed some of these community partners to enter our facility, see what is going on here, and
Under Sheriff, we're going to cut you off real quick. The lights have just started flickering. It feels like we're in a Miami nightclub. We've got the fire drill going on. There's no sound, though, luckily. Yes. We will return in about 15 minutes. My apologies to you guys.
All right, we'll stand by for you.
All right, thank you so much.
Can we just object?
All right.
Well, I was object?
We shut the door and not leave?
We're fine. Okay. Is law enforcement here? She's not going to arrest us.
Yeah, right? Wait, is that true?
It is true.
Yes, right. We're major.
Corrections officers?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much.
You have to be dual certified.
What? Yeah.
Now, if it's inside the facility, it's different. That is where you could make it
very small for escape.
That is kind of fascinating.
Yeah, I'm going to trust
that person.
So, all right, so real quick. So how many prison beds are there in this city? So you got pre-detention.
Great, Steve, you're going to shut the door when you Yes, Steve, what are you doing? Are you going to burn down the building?
No, that's not my plan.
Hi, Chief Wells. I just wanted to let you know we can hear you really well on with the move to the new office space for the conversation. I think the information you're sharing with them is really valuable, so I appreciate being able to listen in on that too. How's the weather where you are at? Is it cold this morning?
Yes. So I've got my sweater on. I'm inside and I'm freezing. Like my hands are... I just can't get warm. I'm over it.
Yeah.
I was just talking to somebody in Florida, and so anyway, I'm ready to get there.
Yeah, it's. I think it's supposed to get up to 78 degrees today. Good.
Would you say you drink noise?
But
you know, Master Chief is an incredibly high position, right?
Yeah, he joined during the war, you know, like that's what everybody does.
The war? We've had a couple of them.
The war, right?
By definition, I joined during the war. I was in the global war on terror.
I didn't think we were over. I thought that was...
No, we officially ended it. And now we're in the Cold War with China.
You were in the, not the Desert Storm, but the second.
Yeah, the second
desert.
But we expanded the whole.
So David said
we
had
the
beach.
Oh, okay.
He said we
wanted separate spaces, I guess.
Play as a neighbor, really.
I feel like that's
a
beach.
Yeah, I was in a separate first degree.
How's Penny doing?
Hey, guys.
Can you tell her I said hello?
I sure will.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Love her to death. Nice people in the world.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
From yours, gentlemen. Hey, gentlemen, how you doing? We appreciate your patience. We're sorry that we had to delay you there.
Yeah, no problem. I hope you had an enjoyable fire drill. We're all good.
No, it's been a real thrill. We went to the wrong area. They told us to go somewhere else. And it's actually still technically going on. I can hear noises in the background. We do only have about 30 minutes allotted left for this. But I did want to... One of the reasons why we did call you up here, and I just want to make sure everyone knows this. So you guys have built a new facility, correct?
Yes, we moved into our new facility in 2016.
Okay. All right. So, yeah. So, and it does have a dedicated... Does it have a dedicated mental health facility? Does it have a dedicated substance abuse facility? How does that kind of work?
All right. So our new facility is everything. So we built an entirely new county jail. So one of the recommendations that I would say to anyone that is in the process of potentially building a new facility and has an understanding that most of our inmates are there due to their circumstances, not because they're, criminals at heart. Most of them are there to their circumstances. So because of that, you're going to get very involved and dedicated into programs. You can't do that unless your facility accommodates that. So one of the great things about our facility is the design of it allows it to run very efficiently. Of course, we'd be happy to open our doors to anybody that wants to look at it and give you walkthroughs and talk to you about what I mean there. It also allows for a great deal of segregation so that we can segregate inmates that are experiencing mental health, so that we can segregate inmates that are want to focus on their substance use recovery. Luckily, our old facility would not have allowed for anything like we're talking about. But the new facility does, just because of a lot of enhancements and the design of it.
So that's key. I genuinely appreciate what you just said, because as we talk about building a new facility, I personally desire, and I hope that our council agrees, is that we do need to make sure that the facility and facilities are able to accommodate some of the things we've been talking about here. So I'm glad to hear that you said the physical building also matches with the potential social services that one could provide.
Yeah, I know that you have other folks you want to talk to, and I want to get Major Cernsey to give you a quick perspective too. But yeah, you know, when you have inmates that are serious about their recovery or serious about their personal improvement, they have to be segregated from inmates that will try to peer pressure them out of that. And they have to be housed with like-minded individuals in order for that to be successful. And if you're operating facilities that use large military-type barracks, that just doesn't work. But, you know, so ours allows us to segregate people for not only the normal reasons that we have to, based on their inmate classification, their risk factors, the crimes they've committed, all that is required in segregation, but it allows us to segregate them with other like-minded individuals so they can work together towards their recovery and improvement. And the only other, I'll just close with, and let Major Sorensen have a little bit of time. He's our expert with this. He is a relatively new director of corrections. He was put into place several years ago after our previous director of corrections failed to show any buy-in in inmate improvement and recovery, so he was dismissed. So he is there for that reason, so I want him to talk to you. But I will tell you, the last piece of advice I can give you is try anything. We've tried everything from art programs. And when you hear an inmate say, after painting a picture, that I've never thought I could create something so beautiful, I've never been proud of myself like this, to yoga, as crazy as all this sounds, you never know what's going to get through to a particular inmate, and you have to just flood them with services and figure out what they're going to respond to, what they're going to buy into. Because like I say, I'm sure it's the same in Jacksonville. And, you know, we work very closely with JSO in many aspects, and they're great partners to us. I'm just not overly familiar with the jail. Is overwhelming majority of our inmates are here because of their circumstances, not because they desire to be criminals. And if we can help them eliminate those circumstances, reduce recidivism, turn them into tax-paying, productive citizens to fill jobs, everybody's looking for employees, and then that brings down the cost of incarceration, and it's just the right thing to do for our inmates. So unless you have anything specific for me, I'm going to slot aside just a bit, and if it's okay with you, let Major Sorensen give you his perspective a little bit.
No, absolutely, and I will say, Under Sheriff, I've spent quite a bit of time in Putnam County and in Palatka in particular. I used to work at the Water Management District down there. If you could have asked me then words that I thought I would never hear from those in the sheriff's office about doing yoga and art painting to help rehabilitate in Putnam County, you know, I would have been shocked then. I would have said never in my life. But I think you're right on the money. And everything you just said, I think, is incredibly poignant and exactly what we should be thinking about. We need to get people out of that facility and into being a productive member of society. Who cares what it looks like? Let's make sure it's done and done in such a way where it's in the benefit of the taxpayer and society. So thank you, and I'm glad to hear that you have a new director of corrections up there, and I can't wait to hear from him.
Good morning. So I just received an email from one of our clerks, one of our civilian employees. She sent me an email this morning, and I think it kind of sums up what we've been trying to do since I took over the jail. And it's a quote that says, "Treat a man as he is, and he will remain as he is. Treat a man as he can and should be, and he will become as he can and should be." Guy named Stephen Covey. I'm not familiar with him, but sounds pretty cool. That's essentially what we've been trying to do since I took over. And I think the biggest challenge for me, without any experience in corrections, all of my career has been on the law enforcement side, putting people in jail. And then the sheriff asked me to take over the jail, and it was a huge learning experience for me. But what I found was the mindset has always been here. Keep them in the jail and keep them alive, and that's enough. No more. And that's from the newest deputy to the director. That was the mindset. So that's been the biggest challenge for me, is trying to change that mindset a little bit and seeing the value in keeping people out of jail if it's feasible. We want plenty of space for the people that belong in the jail. And there are, we've got those, and they need to be locked away from society. But those are a lot fewer than people would imagine. And so if we can help these individuals who, again, like the Colonel said, their circumstances are leading them to continue to come back. They don't have a license, so they're in rural Putnam County, you've got to drive. We don't have the most robust public transportation. And so people are driving on suspended licenses to get to work, to pay their bills, to feed their families. And, you know, if that's one small obstacle that we can help remove, help them to help themselves, then that's what we're trying to focus on, because everybody that we've got in our jail amounts to dollars, and taxpayers care about those dollars. And so I think when it's explained appropriately, you know, it can be confused with kind of a hug and thug mentality. But I think we want to be clear that those people who are preying on innocent folks in our community, we'll take them. You know, we'll lock them up and we'll keep them until they go to prison. But those other folks who don't necessarily belong here, you know, we tried to prioritize these programs to help them help themselves.
Can you guys talk to us about retention? Are you seeing a good number of folks in the corrections field remaining in those positions? Are you good? Do you guys have a lot of vacancies, things like that? I know that's something that we encounter up here.
We are, so it's a challenging job. It's difficult to do. There's lots of stress. There's lots of hours worked, mandatory days off, having to come in and work. And these folks are doing it. There's an element of our community that is willing to do it day in and day out. So we are kind of on an uptick. We're nearly full with our staffing. And, you know, what I found is that empowering the deputies to do their jobs and to try to make a difference, I think is a lot more fulfilling than just coming to work feeling like you're a glorified babysitter.
No, that makes perfect sense to me. I don't know if you got your budget in front of you. Do you know how many full FTEs or full-time employees you have in that in your jail?
How many full-time employees? We've got about 60.
Okay. What's our number, roughly? What's our number, roughly, in terms of, like, what's that?
700.
700
is what you're supposed to have.
650 to 700. Oof. Sorry, I know it's very different models. I'm trying to find the relativeness, you know. It's a little bit easier for you guys to probably fill that up than us. All right, good deal. What can you tell me about some of the programs that you offer, and is it offered to those in medium security and maximum security as well? Like, if you are a maximum security individual showing off a mental health issue. Is there additional segregation within kind of the mental health facility portion of your jail, or how does that work?
So I think I understand the question. Our programs are, for the most part, we offer our programs in a programs room, which require the inmates to be moved from their housing area to where the program is offered. And because of that, we do screen their custody levels, and certain custody levels we don't allow to participate in that program room environment because of there being civilians and no deputies in there with them. And that's one of the things we've started to work on, is expanding that the offering into the housing area. And so what that looks like for us is essentially putting a program on in the rec yard. We've got an inside rec yard that's actually inside the housing tower, and so it doesn't require those higher custody inmates to be moved outside of the tower, which is still within our protocol. And we've got certain volunteers who will come in and put on the class or the course in the rec yard, and it's a little more informal, but it does give that element of population something to do, to look forward to, which helps with their behavior, and also helps them to work towards you know, different goals, whether it's a batterers intervention program, anger management, the yoga. So we do try to make it available to as much of the population as we can.
Understood. Any questions up here?
Not so much a question, but a comment. I'm Charlie Kofer. I'm the elected public defender for this circuit, but I was also a county judge for about 17 years, and I've been involved in the criminal justice system for 44 years now. As you know, we have a relatively new sheriff and then also a relatively new chief of our jails, and I would love to be able to drop your name to have them talk with you. The director of our jail system is Kevin Goff. You've probably met him or talked with him from time to time. He's a second-generation sheriff's officer. I remember his dad was a robbery detective and homicide detective. Then also, Paul Restivo is actually the chief of our local jail. As they tell me, they're drinking from a fire hose learning about corrections because they came from the street. But I think they're very responsive to trying to run the best jail. When our jail was built back in the early 90s, it was basically a box with beds for housing people, and so security was the primary concern. And what we're dealing with now, and what I hope we will deal with our new jail, is a jail that's more than that, and a jail that can deal with the long-term solution to our crime problems and the things that drive people into jail. So I'd love to have y'all connect with them and talk about your experience, and I think they're responsive. Right now they are dealing with just provision of health services issues and contraband issues, and I think you probably know what's happening statewide with that. But they're getting a handle on it, but they're good fellows, and I would love to see them connect with y'all and get y'all's thoughts on it. So, all right?
Absolutely.
All right.
And just to, if you can hear me, I'll back up a little bit.
Yep.
I just had one closing comment. You brought it up, I brought it to my mom when you talked about staffing. So prior to our construction of our new facility, when we did exit interviews on corrections deputies departing the Putnam County Sheriff's Office, the number one reason for their departure was the facility. The facility was horribly designed, very inefficient, and in my opinion, very dangerous for our deputy sheriff. So if I could give you any recommendation, if you build a new facility, and we are certainly willing to do anything we can. I know Sheriff Waters well, known him for years, and I think the world of him. We'll do anything we can to help our partners at JSO. Is get the input of your corrections officers as you begin the jail. They know what they need to run efficiently. They know what's dangerous. And a lot of the ideas that came into our design plan, such as elevated control towers so that they have a 360-degree view of vision, the smaller housing pods, the internal rec yards so they get their fresh air and sunlight, but internally they never leave the building. We eliminated things like mass showers. All the inmates used to travel to a location to large military-looking shower stalls, and now every individual cell has a shower in it. And that has really prevented violence in the jail quite a bit, fighting, and it just made it very efficient to operate and very safe. But really, involving a panel of our corrections deputies in the design phase of our jail, I think, is one of the reasons that the design has been as successful as it has. And again, I know we're very small compared to Jacksonville, but if anybody would like to come see the how our jail looks and how it operates with a very unique tower and pod design, our doors are always open to our friends in Jacksonville.
So to that end, I do have a quick question about your facility. Yeah, how many stories is it? Is it a multi-story
two stories?
Okay, all right. And then I also want to ask, how close is it to your courthouse? And is there an issue when it comes to first appearance, stuff like that? How do you do your first appearance?
So that's a great question. Since COVID, we've implemented quite a bit of virtual courtrooms and court appearances, and so we try to focus on those when we're able to. There are some things by statute we're required to appear in person, and so those individuals are transported. It's probably 2 miles.
2 miles.
From here to the courthouse, but we've done first appearance virtually for years, and then as COVID came about, we transitioned to virtual court en masse.
Our inmate transportation to the courthouse has been drastically reduced. We actually took a small portion of our older facility because we were unique, and I believe Jacksonville's goal is to maybe eventually move that pretrial detention center out of downtown. But our new jail was built right next to the existing, to the original. So we've actually converted a pretty significant portion of the older facility into virtual courtrooms. And every possible thing that we can do virtually, we hold those courts right inside the jail. They only leave when statute requires that they make a personal appearance in front of a judge or a jury trial, for example. But a good number of hearings and all of that is done inside the facility. They never leave.
Yeah, I think people would riot if we built our new facility right next to the old facility. It's also in my district, so I would prefer we move it out of the downtown area. But that's neither here nor there. All right, are there any, we only have about 13 minutes left for our time slot. Are there any other questions that we'd like to ask folks from Putnam County? Please go ahead, Coral.
I had a quick question. I've made notes under Sheriff of all the things you said that y'all changed that were improvements we should adopt. Is there anything now that it's built that you're like, oh, I wish we had done that, or I wish we had, you know, maybe we need bigger offices, or maybe the intake area is a challenge. Is there anything you
did you get that
like to change?
I think the question was, is there anything that we would like to change knowing
right,
what we know now?
Yes.
I think if we would have built it a little bigger.
Okay.
Once you build it, it's there. So space is always a commodity in a jail.
When you say bigger, do you?
There are a number.
And when you say bigger, do you mean beds or hallways or offices?
Beds.
Okay. More beds.
Beds to account for growth. So our previous facility was way overcrowded. And we built the current facility to accommodate about the number that we were at, that we were experiencing then. Well, we've grown as a county, and we call them towers, and we've got two towers, and we've got a total of about 420 beds. So about 210 beds per tower. And we could easily use another one of those because, you know, those of you that are familiar with a jail know that you may not use every bed, but you've only got so many beds for females and so many beds for to accommodate keep separates and things like that that make it difficult, and it eats away at those total numbers very quickly. I can tell you there are some construction things that we have come up with over the years that we've identified as, we didn't know it then, or maybe it was a financial consideration, and now we are kind of wishing it were otherwise. But there are definitely some things we would consider doing a little bit differently.
It's you always could have budgets to work in and so much money to use when you build them, and so there's some things that we are enhancing now, after the fact. You know, there was obviously some corners cut with the camera systems in the jail. So we are in the process now of, doing brand new camera systems. Little enhancements like water control systems to control the amount of water that the inmates can access into their cells to prevent flooding and things along those lines. We recently added RFID systems that track inmate movements, track everything when they go to med pass, and when they go see the doctors and when they're fed. So really the design itself, I think, is very efficient and very good. But just what comes with government work sometimes is get caught within fiscal constraints and cut a little corners. And one of the corners that was cut with ours was some of these little add-on extras that can really be beneficial. Such as, like I say, those water control systems, enhanced camera, better camera systems, and that type of stuff. But overall, and like the major said, we went from about 215 beds to 420, but 420 beds in a jail is not truly 420 beds, as the corrections folks know. So Jacksonville's huge and growing, and we're small and starting to grow, and we're already kind of seeing the pinch a little bit on space in a facility that's less than a decade old.
Thank you.
I do have a quick question. What about juveniles? Are they also in that same detention center, or are they somewhere else?
So the only juveniles that we house are those who have been basically charged as adults. Yep. And so we are, so we have to keep them separated, and so what few juveniles we have, we keep here.
Understood.
Also, one other consideration, I think, is when you're choosing the builder, keep in mind that a jail runs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's constantly got, you know, a door that maybe would be in an office building, and the office building's used 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, whatever. These doors are, you know, there's a lot of wear and tear on every piece of equipment, every light, every socket, all of those things are I think they depreciate a lot sooner because of that constant use. And so any of your facilities people will tell you that, you know, the flush valves on the toilets and things like that, those are a big deal. And so I think that some of the things we found are that the considerations, the builder may not have all built things like a jail in the past, or the architect may not have design things like jail in the past in terms of choosing which some of these details, the fine details.
Understood. Are there any last minute questions? I do kind of want to run through the rest of the agenda. All right. Thank you both so much for joining us. I probably might reach out to you. Maybe I'll swing down there and take a look at some of your facilities. I do want to take a moment for those that are up here and for those listening. We are going to be having the working group do a tour of the Montgomery Correctional Facility on December 19th at 9 a.m. if you would like to join. That's for any and all members here that would like to. If you're going to join, sir, we're just going to need to make a public notice meeting.
Okay.
I'm assuming you've been there before.
Yes, I've been there. And I was going to offer to bring one of my office cars. I could take 5 or 6 people. I think I still remember where it is.
I'm sure you do, yes. We do have one public comment card. I'd like to call up Carnell Oliver. Where are you, sir? You do have 3 minutes. And actually, I will say, sir, I want to see if you have any comments about JREC. If you might have opinions about it yourself. But otherwise, please, you have 3 minutes.
Yes, my name is Carnell Oliver. And one of the things that I want to say about a lot of the programs and rehabilitation in that nature, there are a lot of nicks and crannies. There are too many holes in the foundation. If you want to talk about rehabilitation, I'm going to tell you something about employment. When you focus on just simply working with a lot of the slave drivers of employment, the companies that are in our community, the ones that have a high turnover ratio, those are the ones that love the way the system is designed. But if you can give people proper skill sets, you create and you add more value. That's how you create sustainability. Because I know there's like 15, maybe 20 people that I personally know that have utilized JREC, reentry, and they go work out there at Amazon, but since they're a slave driver, they quit in a month. It's because of some of our employers in our community are not humane enough in an instance. And then there's race relation when it comes down to certain employers in our community. If you want to make people more self-sufficient, you got to recognize that you got two factors that are a problem that caters to our criminal justice system. One is race. Two is skill sets. And the biggest problem right now we're having in this community is that we keep putting a band-aid on a lot of these problems. A lot of these problems is very simple. Number one, you take a good look at really investing in education and people who are incarcerated. And if you're not willing to invest in our people who who are currently incarcerated, you're going to see the same cycle. Everybody's doing the same thing. You ain't doing nothing but duplicating the same thing. And is that really helpful to people in our community that we want to make them successful? No. We're going to have to really make a heavy lift of investment in education. And that's the key to it. Either FSCJ, working with some of my labor unions, is important, and I yield my time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, time is 10:57, unless there's any last comments. This meeting is adjourned, and I will see many of you on the 19th of December at 9 a.m. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I mean, it is true. It's a very different.
Everybody,
it's why I'm so eager to see.
Thank you, Brooke.
Thank you.
Right, because that's very much. Because there's also consolidated.
Have you ever been to J-Rec?
You
should come out. I mean, it's actually more than J-Rec.
I was about to say, that whole facility is all JSF. And is employee management right next door?
Right next door. Yeah. Gas station right next door. Yep. But multiple ones. J-Rec, felon registration, misdemeanor probation, which just recently moved open there. JSO took it over from Salvation Army. And pre-trial clerk. So it's multiple programs, civilian and correction officers. So, actually, the building used to be, when they built JREC, the building actually used to be where they had the voting machine. They stored the voting machine.
Excuse me, I'm going to be a little bit more direct. JREC, it was some five
institutions.
Because now, when it comes down, when y'all talk about mental health and all that stuff, none of that exists. What really exists is that there's been a lack of real investment in the past. A lot of y'all wasn't there during those times when a lot of politicians made a lot of bad choices. And now y'all catching up and up with y'all. Driving the bus, and you're going to get ran over. Right now, everybody's the only thing that you're doing is that you're trying to put the hands of the ones that really don't understand the laws in the system. You can't sell me on nothing that I already know exists. And one of the hardest parts right now is a lot of these programs you keep putting money in on, and the return on the investment is very low. So to me, it's wasteful spending. Either you take a good look at policy, laws, everything of that nature, you're never going to see what you want. And a lot of y'all are aware of that.
That's right. Thank you.
To the extent
of
a little
I would love to come see Nathan. I would also, I've been to graduation with the P's and P's.
What
is that? We are scheduled for next Friday as well, right, Brooks? It's right down the road. I went to JREC. She just invited me to Matrix House. They might not be like super long, but just kind of go down there and put my hands on the stuff.
Get a visual of it.
Where are you for most of your day? Where do you work?
At JREC.
You are at JREC, okay.
Except for meetings like this, I have to go downtown.
Before Monday, that one guy.
Yeah, you were.
We had some time, yeah.
Yesterday, I think
about it too. So.
Oh, well.
Always great to see your smiling face.
Thank you.
Don't forget the FOB Christmas party.
I did not get an invite.
I know Randy would invite you.
I know. Where's my caller, Randy?
I don't know why they didn't send you an
invite. Might be mad.
It's lost in the mail.
I don't know how they're inviting you, but yeah, you should come.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It's usually just like on social media. No, I usually go every year. Yes. Yeah, I'll totally go.
That's a good time.
I did. I did poke the sheriff a little bit. So maybe that's why I didn't get a call.
Wait, is this Friday?
Next Friday.
Oh, that's right.
By the way, it's
all day long.
Yeah.
So I'm hosting her school. Her school gets out of here.
Do me a favor, go to Mama's and say it's 2 days. Can you send me an email with it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you start coming real late. I'll be there. I won't see anybody else that late.
I won't be there. So now you just reminded me, when do the firefighters be there? But you have like 2 days.
The next Thursday is the 21st.
Okay.
Who's protecting the city when that
is? Good. They're not so
dramatic. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because this display is high function.